Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 4, the process of creation, text 22. Prachoditayena pura sarasvati.
Prachoditayena pura sarasvati.
Vitan vita jasya satim smritim hridi. Swalakshana pradura bukalashyata. Same rishina rishabha prasidata. Prachoditayena pura sarasvati. Vitan vijatasya satim smritim hridi. Svalakshana pradura bhutkalashyata. Same rishinam rishabha prasidatam. Prachoditayena pura sarasvati.
Prachoditayena pura sarasvati.
Vitan vita jasya satim smritim hridi. Svalakshana pradura bhutkalashyata. Same rishina rishabha prasidatam. Prachodita. Inspired. Yena. By whom? Pura. In the beginning of creation. Sarasvati. The goddess of learning. Vitan vita. Amplified. Ajasya, of Brahma, the first created living being. Satim Smritim, potent memory. Hridi, in the heart. Swa, in his own. Rakshana, aiming at. Pradurabhut, was generated. Kila, as if. Asyata, from the mouth. Sa, he, may, unto me. Rishina, of the teachers. Rishabha, the chief. Prasidata, be pleased. Translation. May the Lord, who in the beginning of the creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, be pleased with me. Purport. As we have already discussed here and before, the Lord, as the super soul of all living beings, from Brahma to the insignificant Ant, endows all with the required knowledge potent in every living being. A living being is sufficiently potent to possess knowledge from the Lord in the proportion of 56/4, or 78% of the full knowledge acquirable. Since the living being is constitutionally part and parcel of the Lord, he is unable to assimilate all the knowledge that the Lord possesses himself. In the conditioned state, the living being is subject to forget everything after a change of body known as death. This potent knowledge is again inspired by the Lord from within the heart of every living being, and it is known as the awakening of knowledge, for it is comparable to awakening from sleep or unconsciousness. This awakening of knowledge is under the full control of the Lord, and therefore we find in the practical world different grades of knowledge in different persons. This awakening of knowledge is neither an automatic nor a material interaction. The supply source is the Lord himself, Dhyan Pati. For even Brahma is also subject to this regulation of the Supreme Creator. In the beginning of the creation, Brahma is first born. Brahma is born first without any father and mother, because before Brahma, there were no other living beings. Brahma is born from a lotus, which grows from the abdomen of the Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and therefore he is known as Aja. This Brahma, or Aja, is also a living being, part and parcel of the Lord. But being the most pious devotee of the Lord, Brahma is inspired by the Lord to create, subsequent to the main creation by the Lord, through the agency of material nature. Therefore, neither the material nature nor Brahma is independent of the Lord. The material scientist can merely observe the reactions of the material nature without understanding the direction behind such activities. As a child can see the action of electricity without any knowledge of the powerhouse engineer. This imperfect knowledge of the material scientist is due to a poor fund of knowledge. The Vedic knowledge was therefore first impregnated within Brahma, and it appears that Brahma distributed the Vedic knowledge. Brahma is undoubtedly the speaker of the Vedic knowledge, but actually he was inspired by the Lord to receive such transcendental knowledge as it directly descends from the Lord. The Vedas are therefore called apurusheya, or not imparted by any created being. Before the creation, the Lord was there, Narayana Parovyakta, and therefore the words spoken by the Lord are vibrations of transcendental sound. There is a gulf of difference between the two qualities of sound, namely prakrita and aprakrita. The physicist can deal only with the prakrita sound, or sound vibrated in the material sky, and therefore we must know that the Vedic sounds recorded in symbolic expressions cannot be understood by anyone within the universe unless and until one is inspired by the vibration of supernatural aprakrita sound, which descends in the chain of disciplic succession from the Lord to Brahma, from Brahma to Narada, from Narada to Vyasa, and so on. No mundane scholar can translate or reveal the true import of the Vedic mantras. They cannot be understood unless one is inspired or initiated by the authorized spiritual master. The original spiritual master is the Lord himself, and the succession comes down through the sources of parampara as clearly stated in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So unless one receives the transcendental knowledge from the authorized parampara, one should be considered useless, vipala mata, even though one may be greatly qualified in the mundane advancements of arts or science. Shukadeva Goswami is praying from the Lord by dint of being inspired from within by the Lord, so that he could rightly explain the facts and figures of creation as inquired by Maharaj Bridget. A spiritual master is not a theoretical speculator like the mundane scholar, but is Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Om Ganatirmadandasya Gananjana Shalokaya Chakshrun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It would seem common sense that Someone who has access to the greatest knowledge is the most successful in life. How to understand life? So many people have given up even trying to understand it. They say, just live it. Let it come to you. Let you go to it. Why try to understand it all the time? What happens, happens. What doesn't happen, doesn't happen. From the Vedic viewpoint, such a lifestyle is not human. A human being must try to understand why I have this body, why I'm in this world, what is my ultimate goal of life. It's amazing how difficult it is for people to focus in that way these days. Of course, that is the power of the illusory energy, to attract you to useless pursuits in the name of fulfillment, satisfaction, and pleasure. There is a false attractiveness, a false glitter to the illusory energy, and we are captivated by that. And therefore, we're willing to invest our whole life in useless pursuits, pursuits that will be crushed by time. Prahlad Maharaj refers to this being crushed by the wheel of time. Now we think, there's the past, there's the present, there's the future. The clock is ticking, so what? But actually we are being crushed. But because we're so attracted to the glitter of temporary material interaction, we think, I'm okay. Conditioned life is brought about by ignorance. Ignorance clearly means a lack of the proper knowledge. Just like if someone doesn't complete secondary school, you would say, well, they're not really ready for the prime job market. They're going to have a tough time in their life. Parents say that. Government says that. You must have a secondary education. And, of course, even a secondary education is nothing these days. Tertiary, somehow or other. Have some tertiary qualification if you're going to be competitive in the world and be able to hold your own. So there is, in Maya's kingdom, emphasis on knowledge, but no one knows what is the best knowledge to have, what is the most vital knowledge. Let's try to view our life as the product of two situations. Either we're lacking the required knowledge or we're getting the required knowledge. Conditioned life, life in the kingdom of illusory energy, means we're blind to the knowledge that's so essential for our successful existence. We don't have that knowledge. We don't even see the need for that knowledge. We're so caught up in the momentary movements of our body and mind. Physiology and psychology becomes all important to us as we become so self-absorbed in our own physique and our own mentality. And at best, we try to be concerned with a few other persons' physique and psychology. And we think that's life. But the Bhagavatam rejects this kind of lifestyle. The Bhagavatam is seeking to bring to the human being the greatest source of knowledge, the greatest fund of knowledge. Because the ultimate source of everything is unlimited, therefore, if you take knowledge from the unlimited source, you have possibilities to connect with that unlimited. Now, there's a problem. It is not a problem. It is just the way existence is. As the Shastra says, Atat Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavit Krayam Indre Seva Mukhi Jivada Swayam Eva Spratyada. You cannot understand the spiritual reality with your material senses. So bhakti requires humility. The humility to understand I lack the knowledge to understand what is the goal of life, who I am, what is the ultimate source. I lack that knowledge. And if I'm going to at all benefit my life, I need to acquire that divine knowledge and apply it. And by applying the Divya Gyan, by applying that knowledge, my perception changes. I was watching devotees this morning offering a candle because this is Kartika. As we sung the Dhammadharastic prayers, I watched them bow down. I saw professionals, university students, bowing down on the marble floor, holding little candles in their hand. Now, from the material point of view, what is all this? Just think about what you're doing from the material point of view. People would say you're a bit nuts. They would say you're standing in front of marble, brass, wood statues, waving some wax candle, and singing some song in a strange language, and then you're bowing down on the marble floor. What is this? Primitive ritualism. To the material point of view, it will seem like that. Because to understand bhakti requires purified vision. And we may begin to purify our vision, but if we go back the other way, if we allow our material disease to revert, then we lose that vision, that spiritual vision. And we become covered over by illusory energy again. Just like someone who was sick and they start to take the medicine, they become healthy a little bit, but then they stop taking their medicine, again they become sick. So just think how many lifetimes we may have been trying to be Krishna conscious. We have all the necessary knowledge to be successful. But because we have this strong rebellious nature in us, I'm going to be independent, I'm going to do things my way, I will enjoy, I will be fulfilled, I will be successful. Because that streak is so strong in us, sometimes we do crazy things, sometimes we become insensitive and impersonal to Krishna. And in this way, we don't gain the proper spiritual perception that we need. And we start to even doubt the transcendental reality. Especially when you associate with non-devotees. Their mentality rubs off on you. And you start to feel self-conscious. What if they see me bowing down? What if they see me on a Harinam party? How will I explain this? You become very self-conscious by taking the association of non-devotees. Because we feel that I want to relate to them, but I can't explain what I'm doing. And then you take on their mentality. You take seriously their consciousness. They're thinking like this, they're thinking like that. I should be concerned with that. They're human beings. I'm a human being. We all are part of human society. So in this way, gradually, you become under their influence. And then, what happens? You associate with devotees again. And everything starts to become crystal clear. Of course, yes. You join with the devotees in bowing down before the deity. You join with the devotees in kirtan. You join with the devotees in taking prasad. And everything seems crystal clear. Then, of course, you go back with non-devotees and things become muddled. I don't know. What do you Krishna? Oh. I'm not the body. Yeah, but everyone else is acting like they're the body. Here I am trying to control my senses. What appreciation do I get from society in my trying to control my senses? I don't get any certificate. I don't get any award. No, I don't get any trophy. And for most of us, what kind of respect do we get from our family members for controlling our senses? There's no premium in human society these days for those who want to control their senses and get the highest knowledge. The premium in human society today is for those who earn lots of money and live in opulence. Oh, that is the success of life. You have done so well. I remember before I graduated from university, my father, in one of his, it was a real, emotional moment for him. You know, men don't say emotional things too often. So it was a very significant moment for him. So he looked at me and said, "Son, I have to say, I couldn't have done better in my life than what you've done." A year later, I was in the Brahmacharya Ashram. And his tune had changed completely. So, unless you have real knowledge, you become rattled by this. Because you want to be accepted. But you have to look at the quality of the persons from whom you want acceptance. What do they know? What is their lifestyle? What is their purification? Of course, the graphic example given by Srila Prabhupada is that if you're walking through a barnyard with so many barnyard creatures, chickens and horses and donkeys and cows and so on and so forth, ducks, are you concerned with their appreciation? Oh, what are the ducks talking about? What about the noises that the chickens are making? No, you just go about your affairs. You don't get into a tizzy. Oh, I don't know if the chickens like me today. So then you may say, "Oh, but that's kind of severe. I mean, really, we should want to be appreciated by everyone." But you see, appreciation is based on awareness, and people have different degrees of awareness. Just like you see amongst the creatures of the creation, there are different degrees of awareness. So you have to know the level of the awareness of whom you're dealing with, and then you can decide whether to value their appreciation or not. The Bhagavatam is all about distilling your consciousness, purifying your consciousness, so that you will perceive another reality. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, prastasmatma-vanyo-vyakta-vyakta-sanata. There's another reality beyond the interactions of matter. In that other reality, the all-attractiveness of Krishna predominates. In fact, it is everything. So we have to decide. We have to make a decision and carry out that decision with patience, enthusiasm, and determination. Our decision is based on perceiving another reality. We just get a taste in the beginning, and we want to increase that taste. We want to increase that perception. That's why we agree to go on with the bhakti process. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, we've gotten a taste. And now we have to follow through. So, someone with knowledge is always concerned how to protect my tiny devotional creeper so that it will grow. Those of you who garden, you know that when the plants are in the seedling phase, they're very vulnerable, so you're very careful how to deal with them. Sometimes you may even keep the seedling plants in a hothouse or something until they become stronger, more robust, so they can, and then you transplant them into the soil outside. So we need to be concerned with how to protect our spiritual development. We have gotten the rarest gift in all of existence. After countless lifetimes of wandering in so many different bodies on so many different planets, now we have the human form. And not only do we have the human form, but we have a chance to engage in Krishna service. So we must always analyze what will jeopardize my service opportunity. I have gotten the opportunity to engage my senses in Krishna's service. I have the opportunity to let my tongue vibrate the holy name of Krishna. I'm connected to the Guru Parampara, going all the way back to Krishna. What could jeopardize that? You have to be practical about living in the material world. Living in the material world, as I often explain, is not an innocent affair. Oh, there's material nature, and there's me, and there's people, and... No, you are dealing with an illusory energy that is trying to knock you off balance and attract you, suck you in, and then totally bewilder and confusion. That's the nature of Krishna's illusory energy. That's the thankless task done by Maya. To keep those who are not sincere away from Krishna. We've explained, just like you don't want to be disturbed by insincere persons trying to strike up a relationship with you. And so many times in life, we wish that we had someone who would do the service for us of vetting those who want to establish relationships with us. We wish that we had an energy like Krishna has in Maya. We wish we had our own energy that would sort persons out who are approaching us. Will this be a good friend? Will this be a good spouse? Will this be a good partner or business associate? So this is how powerful Krishna is. He doesn't worry about who is qualified to approach him because he has an energy that sorts all that out. That's the purpose of the illusory energy. So we shouldn't become angry at the thankless task done by Maya. The task has a reason, and we should understand that reason. At the same time, we shouldn't have a lackadaisical, relaxed attitude about living within the material world. It's a dangerous place, not simply in that you could lose your life any second, or contract some deadly disease, bacteria, car accidents. I'm sure that when you're riding in cars, on the motorway especially, I'm sure you think sometimes, it's amazing. We're going at 100 kilometers per hour, 120 kilometers per hour. Just one false move of the steering wheel and that's it. I'm sure so many of you think like that. And you begin to think more that, what is it? What is the reason why I'm not in a car accident right now? Is it destiny, or is it my own skill in driving, or having chosen someone who could drive carefully? Why is there not a car accident right now? Because car accidents are happening to so many other people at that moment. Why not you? So you begin to feel so helpless. Just one tiny movement of the steering wheel, you're into the other lane. Boom. Why is this happening to others? Why is it not happening to you? You're surrounded by hundreds of cars. Just on a trip from here to the airport, you'll pass thousands of cars. Why is it that a drunk driver doesn't smash into you? Can you say that no one is drinking while they're driving? And Certainly you know that there are accidents all the time caused by persons who have too much alcohol in their blood. Why not to you? Well, you start to think, I guess I'm just a nice person. I'm just too good and I'm too nice for bad things to happen to. I guess that's the reason. Yeah, or else you say, what you hear sometimes people say, it's just not my time to go. This is a very precarious way to live. Not understanding what is the total system. So yes, there's danger in the material world, in that at any moment we can give up this body. And it is a fact, we will give up this body. We don't like to think about that. Especially when you're a teenager, in your 20s, when you're in your 30s, you see a future for your body, right? Those of you in your 20s and 30s, right? You see a future for your body, yes? It's going to do things. It's going to bring things. It's going to get things. It's going to experience things. Come on. You all admit it. You see a future for your body. You have it all planned out in your mind, maybe deep in your subconsciousness, what your body is going to do, and what it's going to interact with, and how you're going to push on your life through your body. But that body, you can lose any second. And you will lose it. Whether today, tomorrow, or next year. What is the big difference? There's a point Srila Prabhupada would always make. What's the big difference? You lose your body today or in 40 years? What's the difference? You're going to lose it. I don't want to think about that. I want to think about all the good sense gratification that I'm not getting. We are not the body is fundamental, and it's required to hear. It's required that we hear about it again and again, because we're dealing with a material energy that dulls us. So you may say, why did Srila Prabhupada again and again give lectures about how you're not the body? You see, when he was speaking about how you're not the body, he's speaking based on what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, you're simultaneously understanding you're not the body and being connected to Krishna. We must discuss these subject matters because of the dulling effect of living in the material world. Forgetfulness is the story of material existence. We have the tendency to forget because we're so tiny. We're like little sparks of fire that can jump out of the fire and fall onto wet grass and become extinguished. Since forgetfulness is basic to material life, and that forgetfulness can happen abruptly or can happen gradually in a gradual dulling process, we have to be careful. We need to hear repeatedly. And that hearing impregnates us with knowledge. The hearing of transcendental knowledge goes into your heart. Just like during Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja, you sing Divya Gyan Hriday Prakashita. He's my Lord and Master, birth after birth. He opens my darkened eyes. He impregnates my heart with transcendental knowledge. So it's that transcendental knowledge that allows you to see. And then your whole experience changes. But at the same time, we have to take into account there's an energy that is trying to drag us down. Of course, when you become sufficiently advanced, the material energy, Maya, becomes your friend. In that, makes you run quicker to Krishna. But in the beginning phases, we need a healthy fear of Maya, because it's corroding us, it's bewildering us, dulling us. And so the devotee knows that. Therefore, the devotee is wary of material association, wary of material influence, and clinging very tightly to the association of devotees, so that your vision, your transcendental vision, remains intact. The nature of associating with the material energy is forgetfulness. The nature of associating with the spiritual energy is you remember Krishna. Of course, all the forgetfulness and remembrance is triggered by the Lord in the heart, the Supersoul. As Krishna himself explains in Bhagavad Gita, Mata Smriti Gyanam Apoyanam Cha. From me, Krishna says, as the Supersoul, the Paramatma in your heart, comes all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So based on your desires, Krishna arranges for you to remember the essential truths of transcendental knowledge or to forget them. Sometimes you may wonder, why is it that people can go away from bhakti? How could they do that? One year, they are acting on transcendental knowledge and rightly situated. The next year, it's like they never came in contact with such superior information. What happened? It's because their desires change. Therefore, the Supersoul in the heart reciprocates. All right, you want to forget me? I'll help. You can't forget Krishna without his help. You can't remember Krishna without his help. That's what it means for us to be so tiny. We're totally dependent in every aspect of our life, whether it's remembering or forgetting. So therefore, Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita that all the knowledge is coming from him, all the remembrance is coming from him, all the forgetfulness is coming from him. That's why Shukadeva Goswami, in speaking to Prichit Maharaj about the process of creation, is going to offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, asking in so many ways, in so many verses, may that Supreme Personality of Godhead be pleased with me. Because if he's pleased with me, I can speak with knowledge and understand that knowledge. This is not religious sentimentality. It is recognition of the fundamentals of existence. We are so tiny, and in order for us to function properly, we must please the complete whole that we are part of. The bhakti is all about how to please the source of everything. And then automatically we are taken care of. It's not so difficult to understand in our right consciousness. Just like a little child is completely dependent on the parents. In the same way, that's how we're dependent. But we don't like to think of ourselves in that way. Because the whole thrust of material society is to get you to think you are independent, you are self-sufficient, and you should try to make yourself happy materially. It's amazing. We have failed at that so many lifetimes, yet that impetus is still pushing on us. You should make yourself happy materially. You should make yourself happy materially. Fulfill yourself materially. What are the others doing? What are the others saying? What are their opinions of you? So all these influences weigh us down until we associate with devotees. As soon as we reemerge in the association of devotees, the spiritual reality becomes known to us again. And we see a future in bhakti development. When you're associating with the material energy, you hallucinate. How is that hallucination when you associate with the material energy? You see opportunity. It's out there. Fulfillment. Everyone else is getting fulfilled. My chance will come too. You're hallucinating. You're seeing something that's not there, like someone seeing water in the desert. And when you associate with devotees, you perceive the transcendental reality. So everything depends on whom you're associating with. It's not a question of religious belief. It's all about practical perception. Because you're tiny, you'll all admit you're tiny. Because you are tiny, that means your perception is dependent on who you're with and how you're living your life. You're not the all in all. You can't just say, because I am what I am, I will see what I want to see. Forget it. You're too tiny for that. You're dependent on Krishna, either by depending on his spiritual energy or you're depending on his material energy. And according to your dependency, that determines what you can perceive. This is real science. Otherwise, if you want to push on your life just based on what your tiny, material, limited senses can perceive, you'll be frustrated birth after birth. The purpose of the human form of life is to allow you to take up the process by which you can extend your perception to the spiritual reality. So we're getting the knowledge to do that. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami is glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the source of all knowledge. He's saying, before there was the creation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead existed, Narayana Purvata. And at the beginning of the creation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead inserted knowledge into the universe through Brahma by inspiring within the heart of Brahma the full knowledge. That's how knowledge entered into the material universe. Now, you may say, well, won't some say this is mythology? It was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what do we read that he's doing? Brahma is born first without any father or mother. Because before Brahma, there were no other living beings. Brahma is born from the lotus, which grows from the abdomen of the Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Now pretend you're in Maya and think about this. Four-headed Brahma, yeah, who has no mother and father, born on a lotus flower, coming from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who's reclining, laying on a kind of waterbed on the Garbhadaka ocean. And his feet are being massaged by Lakshmi. Well, that sounds good. That's how the mundane attitude will consider things. But why is it that you're accepting? You're not accepting because you're blind followers. You're accepting because your senses have become purified. And to various degrees, the transcendental reality is becoming open to you. The curtain of Maya is drawing back. That's why you accept. But materialists will say, you're accepting because you're blindly following. You're swallowing this dogma, this mythology. It makes you feel good. All right, we want you to feel good. Believe what you got to believe, whatever. But that is not our situation. We're accepting because we have been sensitized once again to the transcendental reality. Our senses have changed. Our consciousness has changed. Therefore, we're not shocked when we hear the transcendental information about Brahma born from a lotus flower. Actually, because you're purified, you appreciate how artistic Krishna is. And that's because you're losing your envy. You can't do that. You can't give birth to someone by sprouting a lotus flower from your navel. Could you ever think of doing such a thing? For human beings, birth is such a traumatic affair. You know, sometimes, you know, the cesarean section, and the abdomen of the mother is sliced open, and they have to reach in and pull the child out. And, Brahma takes birth with no mother, no father. It's Garbhanakshaya Vishnu sprouting a lotus flower from the navel, and then Brahma appears on top of the lotus flower. So instead of being envious, we appreciate the supreme artistry of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is the most expert in everything. In technology, in artistry. So a devotee appreciates that. Now, let's take things from... We'll just look at things from logic and reason. How can you say no? It's impossible. Brahma can't be born without any mother or father. He can't be born from a lotus which grows from the abdomen of Garbhanakshaya. How can you say no? What is in your understanding that you can say no? Think about it. If you're going to be an honest materialist, you have to say, I don't know. It could be true, maybe not. But how can you just say, no, this is nonsense? Do you know what went on at the beginning of the universe? Of course, if you're a materialist, you are duty-bound to try and show how everything came from matter. There's no demonstration of that, but you have to believe that. You can't in any way acknowledge that there could be some spiritual consciousness, which is the cause of everything. So you have to embrace very feverishly the material belief that everything comes from matter. You must empower matter to do inconceivable things. Now you take your pick. Everything comes from matter, or Brahma is born from a lotus flower coming from the navel of Garbhanakshaya Vishnu. So how do you decide? First of all, what's the process for experiencing that everything comes from matter? Give me the scientific process. Take me into the laboratory and show me the process that will demonstrate everything arises from matter. Matter does inconceivable things. It produces consciousness, it produces life, it produces the most intelligent people. You can't show that. Okay then. Show me the process by which I can understand what Shukadeva Goswami is talking about in this chapter, the process of creation. 24 hours a day we have that process. For those who want to take it up. It's not that we are every day in Bhagavatam class imparting doctrine to you. Like some kind of political party will indoctrinate the people during communist regimes. Indoctrination was very important. It's not that we are trying to just fill your heads with some kind of religious dogma so you'll do your service. Instead of paying you money, we pay you with dogma. We pay you with religious doctrine. No, we have a 24-hour-a-day process for understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have a 24-hour-a-day process for receiving knowledge and learning how to apply that knowledge so we see the effects of that knowledge in our life. So that is what we are all about. We are all about receiving the best knowledge and applying that best knowledge and then perceiving the transformations in our life as we become closer and closer to the spiritual reality. By following the process given in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna in the heart becomes pleased and he lets you see. He lets you remember him and he helps you to forget your material desires. That is a great miracle that we'll all appreciate. When you see how Krishna is helping you to forget your material desires, it'll happen to you. You'll scratch your head and wonder, what happened to that desire I had? For years, various material desires are trying to overpower you. You're struggling. Oh, when will the struggle end? Is it going to be like this all my life? How long can I hold out? And then you continue in the bhakti process and mystically, these desires disappear. You scratch your head. What happened? I don't even remember what I wanted before. Yes. That is bhakti mysticism. Actually, what's happening is that the Lord in the heart, pleased by your devotional service, helps you forget material desires. So you're not in an impossible situation by practicing bhakti. Material life is an impossible situation. You're trapped. You will never get the knowledge you need to get out of the trap. Because the knowledge that you need is outside of the possibilities of the material lifestyle. And in bhakti, you have access to all the knowledge you need for perfecting your life. And you become increasingly aware of that. All right, we'll stop here. Any questions? Yes. As the years of sincere bhakti practice go by, more and more you realize how you're not a devotee. It's the opposite from material life and what we expect in material life. In material life, we expect that the more I do something, the more I realize how great I am. Or let's say, generally, you think that as time goes by, you should feel more and more competent. People have that understanding, misunderstanding in material life, that age brings wisdom. The older I get, the more I'll know. In bhakti, the more you progress in bhakti, the more you realize, I'm so far away from Krishna. But this is a spiritually luxurious feeling. Because what's happening is that you're entering into the ocean of endless love. And you become more and more aware. There's no limit to advancement in bhakti. There's no limit to the divine love. So you always feel that. The more I get, the more I realize I don't have. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that this is the symptom of ecstatic love of Krishna. The devotee who is situated in ecstatic love of Krishna thinks, I don't have any love for Krishna at all. Because there's always so much more to be had. That's why we, in the prayer about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, by Srinivasacharya, Vande Rupa Sanatana, Raghuyago, Sri Jiva Kopalika, we hear that they were always expanding the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss. That means, as members of the parampara, they're doing their service to show their spiritual dependence, that the limitations of the ocean of transcendental bliss are always expanding endlessly. The parampara is making that clear. Because if we're genuinely making spiritual advancement, we're going to feel that there's no limit to this. I thought I was Krishna conscious last year, but now I see there's so much more advancement to make. You may think, I'm doing so much service. Don't ask me to do any more. I'm doing so much service. And then the next year you realize, I'm not doing anything. Look at that Prabhu. Look at that Mataji. They're doing so much. I'm not doing anything. So it goes on and on like that. This is real love. We should think that we need to become qualified to establish friendships with devotees. Not that, where are my friends? How come I don't have any devotee friends? Where are they? Friends, come to me. And when someone tries to establish friendship and devotional service with you, why don't you agree with me? You're my friend. You should see things exactly the way I see them. That's the qualification for being my friend. Oh, you disagree with me? Just see, I have no friends. So, if you want devotee friends, we have to become a bit qualified in the six loving exchanges. It's a transcendental art, a transcendental skill. You can pray to the deities, please empower me so I can have devotee friends. Every time you're dealing with a devotee, you can pray to Krishna, please let me act in such a way that is inspiring and is receptive to devotee association. So try doing that. The process works. Condescending attitude comes from material contamination. We want to look down on someone. Now I'm a Hare Krishna. You animals. Dogs, hogs, camels, asses. The Bhagavatam does say that. But then you have to look at yourself and see, well, how much of a devotee am I really? Just one misstep, one improper action, and I'm back down on their level again. So how great am I? The proper attitude is, yes, you are the most fortunate because you have access to the greatest knowledge, to the best process for developing love of God. But it's not that you yourself are fortunate in of yourself. You're fortunate because of your connection. So we have to know how to measure our good fortune. Our good fortune is always measured in terms of connection to something and someone much greater than us. Not that we think we're great in of ourselves. Otherwise, how will we ever understand Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita? I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai, lower than the worm and stool. We think he's just saying poetry. But he's actually thinking like that and feeling like that. Because that's, as we discussed, the nature of real love of Krishna. The real devotee thinks, I have no love for Krishna at all. So it is a fact that people are living like animals these days. At the same time, we should understand that although we have no good qualities of our own, by some miracle of parampara, we have the greatest opportunity. Therefore, we're so concerned how these suffering people can get that opportunity. And what do we think? If they will take that opportunity, they'll be much better devotees than me. That is the proper attitude. If this person will take one of Srila Prabhupada's books, they'll appreciate it better than I do. Sometimes when I'm introducing Prabhupada's books to someone and I watch them turn the pages, I start thinking, oh, how their life will be so much more successful. And I see them start to relish the information. I think, well, I better take a second look at that. Maybe it's happened to you also. You see someone, you know, start leafing through Bhagavad Gita and read something. Ooh, that sounds really good. And you think, ooh, maybe I should look at that again too. Or you see some newcomer dancing in kirtan happily. Starting, hey, what about me? we should understand that whatever great fortune we have is because of our connection to something and someone much greater than us. And we think that if these persons who are suffering in material illusion would have the chance to be Krishna conscious, they would be much better devotees than us. We cannot deny. For example, you see someone on a child on the roof walking to the edge of the roof. You cannot say, oh, there's no problem. We're all okay. No, you cry out to stop the child from walking to the edge of the roof. So we're not going to abandon the perspective that people are suffering in illusion. And they're living horribly. They're living like animals. At the same time, we don't become proud, look down our noses. In fact, we remember the circumstances we came from. And we know that just a few missteps and we could be right back where we started, in the depths of ignorance. Compassion is what drives outreach activity. You have to say what the disease is, but at the same time, you remember that you were also a diseased person. And you're thinking, if these people will accept the cure, they'll be much healthier than we are. We never think, now I've got Krishna. We always think there's so much more service to Krishna that I could do. Therefore, who am I to think I'm so great? So preaching, outreach, is based on being the servant of everyone. Not bashing everyone because we're great and superior. One thing we need to understand is when Prabhupada would be lion-like in his preaching, it was done with the greatest humility and compassion. So if you want to be lion-like, you also have develop the compassion and the humility too. Not just isolate one element. Prabhupada was strong. Yes, he was strong. And he did want his followers to be strong and speak strongly. But at the same time, that strength came from the softest heart. I know I've told you. One of the first times I saw Prabhupada, I was sitting right in front of him, and he was roaring like a lion. If you're optimistic about material life, you're an animal! A human being must be pessimistic. Only an animal is optimistic about material life. But I felt the greatest softness of the heart, the greatest compassion. So we have to take the whole package. Not just speaking strongly, they're animals. What about the humility and the softness of the heart? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.